we're talking more about sin. So there's something that's going on in the home that seems sinful or is headed down a path that will lead to sin. In those instances, I would say, yeah, Scripture seems to very clearly tell us, take the initiative and have discussions. But we all know you got to pick the timing of that, right? Okay, so some no-nos would be, I'm walking in the door at 6 o'clock and I got a list of things that have to be done between 6 and 8. That's not a good time to have those kind of conversations. Or it's midnight, we're both tired and exhausted. That's probably not a good time. We've just had a major conflict over something. That's probably not a good time. But common sense would tell us, ahead of time, say, hey, tonight, there's really something I'd like us to spend a few minutes talking about. So you've prepped and prepared, and then you can go in and have that conversation. My guess is there's lots of things that we would want to put in that bucket of, well, maybe we ought to talk about that, and you really don't need to, because it's a personal rub of something you're annoyed by or just don't like, and you got to just get over that. That's your own problem, not your spouse's. How's that for direct? Okay, let me pass it over here to Jessica. We're going to tape these. We're going to do these in the mic because we're taping this. Lots of people that couldn't be here asked for it.
Okay, I know that we're called to be helpers suitable for our husbands. What would that look like? In what capacity are we going to be a helper suitable or helper mate, as you called it?
How does that play itself out? Is that what you're asking me? In terms of the practical, daily, what does that mean? Sure. Okay, great question. The Bible tends to, and this isn't true in every case, it tends to give us a broad brush. It tends to paint with a broad brush. It says, here's the principle. Do this, be this, act this way, think this way. But the practical, here's exactly what that means in every setting, that is less common in Scripture. So the way that applies here is, I would say, from a biblical standpoint, there's this, 30,000-foot view that if we were to look down on roles, God says, husband, you lovingly lead and take initiative. Wife, you respectfully support. There are some cases in Scripture where a little bit more of that's teased out, but mostly it's not. Mostly it is, here's the vision for how a home should work. And God's going to bring two people together that are different than any other two people on the planet. And the two of you figure out, what exactly does that look like in our home? Now, some ways it does speak to it directly is, and this won't be popular, but the Scriptures do teach directly that the husband is to bear the financial burden for the family, that it is his role to be the one that takes, that shoulders that burden. And that Titus 2 says, in particular, young women should support the work of the family in the home and raise the kids. Does that mean a wife cannot work? No, that's not what I'm saying. That's not what that text says. That's not a biblical idea. But if the husband abdicates that role completely, there's a problem. If the wife works so much that she cannot do the things that she needs to do to support the home, then there's a problem. So that's a specific example. Beyond that, honestly, there's a whole lot of fluidity in how a marriage relationship actually looks. So I would say to you guys, figure that out in your own home. What does it look like in your home for the husband to love you like Christ loves the church and to serve and take initiative? What does it look like for you to support? David is going to need different kind of support probably than I need. We live two really different lives. And we could go around the room and say that for each person. So the people that boil this way down into tasks, I think, is a mistake. So in other words, the wife's role is to empty the dishwasher. Okay? There is no verse that says that. Okay? Men, you're not exercising loving leadership when you notice the trash full and you think, well, that's my wife's job. Okay? The home ought to be a place where both parties, if something's got to be done, they come to the table and work on getting it done. Right? So it doesn't go down near that far. It gives us this broad perspective. It gives us a few examples, like, men, you bear the burden for work. Wives, you support that. And if necessary, work. And raise the children and support them. But it doesn't list out a whole lot of stuff beyond that. So that requires some exercising of, we're going to discuss, we're going to share, we're going to dream, we're going to talk about how we want our home to look, we're going to pray, we're going to find what works for us, and then we're going to function within those two broad roles that God has seemed to set up. That's probably not near as helpful as you had hoped it would be. But I really think that's the biblical answer to that, I think. Okay? So can you pass that up this way?
I just wanted to piggyback on that. How do you know when you trip into pushing him aside and starting to lead? You know what I mean? Like, you're trying to help, but you've obviously tripped over that, but you don't know that you've done that, and now you're making it impossible for him to lead.
How do you know as a wife if you've taken the role away from your husband? Okay, intentionally, unintentionally. How do you know that that's happened? Well, what would be the easiest thing to do? Ask him, right? Now, my guess is few would have the guts to answer that question, or the stupidity. Okay? But that's probably the best place to start, is to just ask. Hey, I'm trying to take initiative in this area because it seemed like something needed to be done. Are you feeling pushed out? Are you feeling like I'm taking this from you? That's the way I would pursue that. I don't know that there is a real cut, clear answer to that question. I mean, obviously, based on what we've just said about roles, if back in our former church, we had a family that the wife had a really good job, and the husband quit work and laid in bed. And he didn't work at all. That has obviously completely subverted and switched what's supposed to happen there. And, man, I could tell you all kinds of issues that ended up dredging up. But God worked in his life, and he eventually started working again. And it was a weird relationship in which he really wasn't educated well. And now they're at a much, much better place. Plus, he was around him. But, you know, most cases aren't that. They're more subtle. They're a husband not taking initiative with spiritual things with the kids, for example. And so the wife sees husband's not doing that. That's clearly something that needs to happen. You don't want kids growing up having their only nourishment coming from church, right? You want it at home, too. I would expect that that's a massive place where that takes place. So have conversation about that. And pray God will use that to kick him in the rear end so he'll do the things he needs to be doing. Sorry, dude. All right. What else?
Hello? All right. You mentioned early on that the marriage needs to be a place for open criticism in the household. What are all the giggling? What are some practical ways of working towards that together? So it's not easy to start off the bat of day one marriage and say, okay, all criticism's on the table. Ready, set, go. It's not hard, it's not easy to do that, even years in. And so what are practical ways to begin those discussions of criticism or whatever you want to call it in among a marriage?
Okay. Good question. I'm probably not the best person to answer that because, honestly, from young, really young, it seems like God has constantly had me in situations where people were either willing to come to me or there was just issue after issue after issue that I felt it would be sin for me not to lovingly approach people and talk about. And it's one of the few things in life that I've been willing to do and not fought against. So I don't know that I have a personal struggle there that I can relate to. So I'd love to just ask you guys, what would it take to develop a home in which that's okay? And not only okay, it's valued and sought after. What do you think? Amanda. If there's emotional, active emotional connection to what you need to discuss, it's probably not yet time to bring it up. What else? that help? My number one suggestion would be take the initiative to confess your sin to your spouse before they're coming to you. If it's commonplace for me to say to Jill, I'm really battling this, would you pray for me? If that's a fairly common conversation, I don't mean daily, but with some sense of regularity, it's normal for my wife to hear me say, I'm failing in this way before God. That is building and infusing in the DNA of our relationship this recognition that I don't have it all together. And it's actively asking for help by being the person that you're choosing to confess that sin to. And that can encourage an environment in which that person can then later be somebody that can initiate that kind of discussion. But you're going to trip and fall as you learn how to do this, because you're going to blow up and you're going to say nasty things. You're going to use nasty words. It's not going to go well. You've got to learn through from failure. But don't hurt each other when you're seeking to help each other. That's a really dumb thing to do. Seek forgiveness if you really messed this up, and just be open to how God would want your marriage relationship to work as loving sandpaper in that way. It can be a huge blessing. So, great question. Really great question. And we just scared your wife away. So, okay, where's that mic? Do you still have it? Pass it up here. I think it's off. They can turn it off in the back, so let's just leave it on.
It's kind of off topic, but we talk about holding each other accountable, and as Christians, we hold each other accountable, and we all know the outlines of marriage, and we see close friends in marriages that aren't working, and I just wonder, at what point, as Christians, do we confront another couple in marriage, and I know that we don't know how the ins and outs of every relationship work, but we obviously know what is not working and is what is not Christian-based. So I guess I'm wondering, you know, at what point is it safe to say, okay, we need to talk to these people?
Sure. Is it ever appropriate for a wife to go to another wife, a husband to go to another husband, or a couple to go to another couple and say, are you struggling? Are you hurting? Are things all right? This doesn't look good. Can we help you? Is that ever appropriate? Okay. I would go way beyond that and say it's absolutely mandatory. If we fail to do that for one another, then we don't really love and care about each other. If we really love and care and support and want to build each other up and to help each other from falling into huge pitfalls of sin, then we'll be willing to go somewhere that's hard. And that would be a hard conversation, right? If you've never had one like that, those are not not light and easy and fun. Okay, but as a church family, that's something we have to be willing to do. And I would suggest to you sooner rather than later. Because if it's at the point that you can see it, then it's probably been bad a while in the home. So there's all kinds of ways you can go about that. I would suggest you either pursue that conversation as the husband approaching the husband or the wife approaching the wife alone and just have an initial discussion. Or if it's at the point that a husband and wife could sit down with another husband and wife and say, you appear to us to be struggling. We may be wrong. But is there any way we can come alongside you and help you? It would be awesome. It would be amazing if that was normal, that we were willing to risk the difficulty of hard conversations in order to love each other enough that way. So how do you know when is the time to do that? I would suggest to you, if you are picking up on the fact that things are not good, it's time. Because that means that it's spilled out of the home enough that they can no longer contain it. Nobody wants their marriage problems to be aired. Okay? Unless you're a vindictive spouse and you're trying to make it obvious the other person's a jerk, which can happen. But unless you're in that scenario, which is not most people, then you don't want that junk coming out. You want that staying in your home. So if it's obvious enough that it's out, then it's already at a danger point. It's already at the place you need to go to each other. So I'm so thrilled you asked that. I would not have thought to bring that up tonight. And I hope that's something we can leave with, is a willingness to support one another and go to one another. I may be wrong, but I think most marriages will have seasons of struggle, that it would be great to have other friends who are willing to stand with you. What else?
Is it on? Okay. I was just wondering how much of this, like, you can apply, like, how much of this stuff that is supposed to be between a husband and a wife should be applied to, like, a dating relationship. Like, how far does that go? Do the principles go?
Well, ideally, in a dating relationship, you're practicing many of the things, not all, hopefully, but many of the things that you're going to do once you're married. So, there would be this season of time. You don't go from we're on a first date and now that man is your initiator and you are the respecter. You don't start there, right? That would be a little strange. But as you're dating, you're moving through a process of that becoming more and more and more true. And I would think that trajectory should be there for sure, but it's going to look different in terms of how much time that needs for each and every person, how prepared they are to take those roles, and the amount of junk each person has in their life to learn how to set it aside and to embrace what God's called them to do. But the vast majority of it would apply if it is a dating relationship that's moving towards marriage, which I don't know why you date if it's not for that reason. So that's a short answer, but I think the Song of Solomon would give a great portrait or portrayal of that scope of a relationship from beginning all the way to joyful fruit that we talked about. And it definitely follows that track of seeking the other person out, learning to live out those roles, and then fully functioning within them. So, great question. That would apply to quite a few people.
One more question?
No, you're only one allowed. Yeah, sure.
I've grown up kind of with this idea that whoever would be interested in me would have to ask my father's permission to marry me, and I've just kind of had that idea from books that I've read growing up. But now that I'm, like, older, I don't exactly know if I expect, like, somebody to get permission from my father. Like, what we were talking about with how do you kind of make that shift and transition from being, like, under your parents' authority but still honoring them. So, like, I don't exactly know what I'm asking exactly, but do you understand what I'm trying to say?
I don't understand what I'm asking, but you understand what I'm asking? That's probably a cultural value. I mean, I don't know of a verse that tells us we have to do that. We might could get there from some principles that would say that's a good idea. Dads, you care for, protect, take care of your kids, both sons and daughters. Is that a functional way to help protect the daughter? Maybe. But hopefully, if he doesn't like the person, he's voiced that long before it's getting to that conversation, right? So it seems like a formality to me that it doesn't really mean a whole lot, except that in some settings, that still communicates to the father. And if that's true, then it's a really great idea because you want that person to like you. You want to honor them, right? I mean, honestly, in all seriousness, if the father of that girl believes that's important, then that's not something you want to jump through and ignore. You want to honor him and honor her by honoring him and make that request. When I called Jill's, it's okay if I say this. I had met Jill's parents are divorced, and I think I'd been around her dad like two or three times prior to the point of us getting to that stage of becoming engaged. He lived way away in another state, and he was already gone before I met her, and so we didn't have a bad relationship. We just didn't have a relationship. But it still seemed like the honorable thing to do, right? So I called him on the phone, and we were talking. And that was the first time I'd ever called him on the phone to talk, I think. The only time. And he's a man of few words, right? Unless it has to do with golf. So we were visiting, and I said, Gene, I bought Jill a ring, and I'd really love to give it to her if that's okay. And there was this dead silence. And then he goes, well, what kind of ring? And I'm thinking, like, Cracker Jack ring, you know, gold ring. So, I said, I'd like to marry your daughter, and I'd like your permission to do that. And then again, just boom, silence. That, I swear, was like 5 minutes. And then he says, well, I guess it's okay. And hung up the phone. That was it. That was it. So, I don't know that it meant a whole lot. But in my case, it felt like a way to honor him and the fact that he didn't know me well. And I wanted him to know how he related to his daughter was important to me. So, I mean, my parents didn't expect me to do that, I don't think. But that's more of a cultural thing. But it can still be important. So, just a second. Oh, we got one over here. I'll come to you because you're closer.
It's on now. Okay. You were talking earlier about going from being your parents' children, like your son and daughter, to being a separate entity, like husband and wife, and the proper way to transition from one to the other. How do you do that? What does that look like? How do you do that properly as opposed to improperly?
Well, geez, we could spend all night, another 2 hours on that, right? Those of you that are married. The opportunities for blessing in that are great. The potholes are even greater. So, you know, I would think anybody here that's married could give you counsel on that. Every set of parents is different in their expectation level for how that relationship will continue. I really think that new unit, that new family unit, has to get together and explore what does that mean and look like for us. Some couples are way more involved with their in-laws, for example, than others. There is no right or wrong there. It's just the big issue would be meeting the expectations of each other. And you want to present a united front to the parents. You never, ever, ever want to be against each other or anything that could divide you from one parent to the other or one set of parents to the other. Or for most of us, we have parents that are split. So this is even harder because there's a whole additional set of people to deal with. So you want to bring a husband and wife together, I think, and have real conversations about how often are we making visits? What do holidays look like? What kind of conversations are we going to have? Is there anything that's off limits? Are we going to such and such if we have an argument or discussion? I would suggest you literally talk through all that stuff and create a home in which you've actively, on purpose, intentionally set up, here's how we want our new family to work. And there's really not a big list of do's and don'ts there. It's more what you want, and does that match what the other person wants? And can you work that out together? At the core, the teaching there is, you're not relying on your parents. You're relying on each other. So whatever that looks like for each person or each couple is the setting you want to develop. That make sense? Okay, how about one or two more? Pass that over this way, could you? Jill, can you pass that to Pam? Thanks.
Kind of piggybacking on that one, you had mentioned in a message a couple weeks back that a couple shouldn't discuss their problems with their parents. Some folks have really great relationships with their parents, and you know, parents have a lot of wisdom. What would, I guess, be the reasoning for
sure.
Don't discuss your problems with your parents?
I may take a hard stance on that, but let me see if I can explain it a little bit. It's hard for me to imagine a scenario in which a parent does not permanently have a dispensation for their kid that is different than the dispensation they have for anybody else. So even the best, most equal parents, I think, are still bent towards their kids. And I think you run the risk of exacerbating that and it causing problems if you go to them and discuss issues. If you're stuck on an island with a cell phone and you don't know a single other person in the planet and you're duking it out like crazy with your spouse and God's gone on vacation, then it might be okay to call them then. Outside of that, I think you're only headed for trouble. I don't see any positive happening from that. I think there's just the opportunity for a rub to develop between your family of origin and yourself and that spouse. Whether that ever comes out or not, it's still like you're throwing seeds into it. So I recognize that that is probably a hard stance on that, but I would just never go to my folks and say anything negative about Jill, ever. I only want them to love her, care for her, treat her well. I don't want to give them any ammo to have any level of concern towards her. I have seen people do some really amazing things, like find out their husband is having an affair and them temporarily leave that relationship and even at times live with the parents but never tell them what's going on, and that marriage be healed and restored, and then you have nothing you have to deal with to fix over here. So I've really seen some dramatic things happen that would never have happened if there had been this constant or even occasional, I need their counsel. My suggestion would be find somebody else who can provide you with counsel. Now, I don't have a verse for any of that. That is more the way I would apply leaving father and mother than it is a hard and fast biblical principle.
Would you qualify that, saying that you shouldn't speak with your parents about issues, to say that deals more with issues where you and your spouse are disagreeing? I mean, something more just, you know, Jenny and I are struggling with this, not against each other, but just something that we could both use your support in. I mean, something like that is maybe a little more appropriate to speak with your parents about.
Yeah, I'm talking about things that there's conflict between you, not we're both facing this and it's hard together. Yeah. So parents are often extremely well-suited to help in that kind of thing, because they can help you together and support you and bless you. So, yeah, I don't mean that at all. I should have probably specified that. Sorry.
What about with friends and close relatives?
So, friends and close relatives. Do you need somebody to talk to if things are hard in the marriage? Many times, yes. Not always. Maybe there's times you're directing it to God. But do you need other people? Sure. Just pick wisely. So I'm not saying hide your problems in home and don't ever get help. I'm saying parents aren't the best people to bring into that. And find another one or two godly people that can support you and stand alongside you. But don't find 15 or 20. Okay? Right? The goal is that the improvement of the situation where it's no longer an issue. So the less people that know, the better. Okay? Let's take one more and then we'll end it there. Anybody else got one back up here? Can you pass it up this way, please? Thanks.
In almost every case where I've spoken with friends, couples at large that are having problems in conflict resolution in their marriages, the way the conflict was resolved in their home growing up is front and foremost, isn't that? That's almost the first thing everybody says is, well, I grew up doing it this way, and this was this big problem, and she grew up screaming at this person, and that's how they solve their problems, or they just never solve problems, or whatever the conflict is. So obviously, then what that leads me to is two things. Number one, any specific advice for parents to instill proper conflict resolution in their children so that their marriages are easier. And number two would be any specific advice in overcoming that as adults in your new marriage.
Okay, so we all come to marriage not in this isolated bubble that are neutral, but we've been reared in an environment to deal with everything, not just conflict, but everything in the way that we saw it dealt with. So people either deal with that one of two ways. You either reinforce it by living it out, or you just reject it and you're disgusted by it and you intentionally do something different. So that's usually the stances that we take. Many times we need to just learn how to adapt and change and build on what was good, reject what was bad. So to the first question related to the kids, I think in the way that you teach a child to relate to God and the way you teach a child to relate to other people they have conflict with, you're innately building those principles into them. So I know we've talked a lot here about you, with a child, you want to deal with not just the behavior, but the heart that drove the behavior. So you want to help them, in other words, see their own sinfulness. You want to lead them there, even hopefully without just telling them outright. So in other words, why did you do such and such? Well, because I wanted it. Well, why did you want it? And if a child's in a home where God is discussed often, especially if the child's already a believer, you can get to the point where they can see their own sin. That's a great thing, because then they're looking to Jesus to fix the problem, not just, don't do that, right? So if you lead them to see their heart, to see their need for the gospel, to rejoice in the fact that they're forgiven over the pettiest little things, then they'll know how to do that in the really big mistakes in life. And if then those actions have to be followed up, so if our two kids are arguing over something, if there's not just this punishment, you go to your room because you were a jerk and yanked that toy away, but if the action has to be corrected, if I have to return that toy and apologize and then sit and play with while the other person plays with it, then you're investing in a home where there's love and forgiveness and support. So I would suggest those things. As a child gets older, is it ever appropriate to tell your kid, hey, mom and daddy haven't always done this well. We used to fight about this. Can you have those kind of conversations? That's a great thing. That ought to be normal. So I would suggest as a child gets older that you have those kind of conversations. How you deal with your own, this is how I grew up. The way you grew up may be right or wrong, or it may be amoral. So we always want to look to Scripture as our basis of authority, not our home of origin. But that's really hard, isn't it? Because Scripture wasn't our home of origin. We were born in sin. So the doctrine of sin really matters, because you're born innately bent away from God, not towards God. And the home often reinforces those tendencies. So how do you get over the way you were raised? Well, I think consciously asking yourself what was good about it, what wasn't good, and then actively seeking to overcome those Achilles tendencies or Achilles heels that you might have, because when Dad got mad, he always blew up and yelled at Mom. The reality is, if that was true, that will probably be your initial dispensation. So if you've thought through that, prayed through that, you're aware of that, then when you get into conflict, I don't think your first thought is, don't be like Dad. That's not good. I think your first thought is, honor God. Live out the gospel. And if that means don't be like Dad, then it does. But seek to be transformed through the renewing of your mind by attacking those issues with Scripture. Be angry and don't sin. Don't let the sun go down in your anger, just as an example. So this stuff is like the garden. It takes work. You got to tend it. You got to water it. You got to fertilize it. You got to feed it. It won't happen on its own. I'd say you got to work at it. Let me stop there just for time's sake, but I'm willing to stay as late as anybody else wants to stay. So if there's more things that you want to discuss, maybe there's things that you didn't feel comfortable asking about in a large setting, we can hang around and do that more directly. Or if you want to email me, call me, feel free to do that. Thanks for coming tonight. I hope this was beneficial for you. And I hope that there's things here that you can take and use in your own life, but also help other people with and help build up a church where we're living out these principles. So thanks for being here. Love the time with you. Let me know if you want to talk more.